This week, with all the violence, not just the explosions in Turkey, but particularly the what seems to be accelerating gun violence at schools, three in the last 8 days or so, we as a staff decided that it's really time that we focus our thoughts here on that issue of gun violence. So next Sunday's service will be a service where we address that instead of what it says here in the program. Here in the sanctuary of ancient dreams, wisdom, and beauty, we come to grow, to be healed, to stretch mind and heart, to be challenged, renewed, to be helped in our own continuing struggles for meaning and for love, to help build a world with more justice and mercy in it, to be counted among the hopers and the doers. In the face of cynicism, darkness, brutality around us and within, we seek to align ourselves with a living community that would affirm rather than despair, that would think and act rather than simply adjust and succumb. Here we invite the spirit of our own humanity and the healing powers under, around, through, and beyond it to give us the nerve and grace, the toughness and sensitivity to search out the truth that frees and the life that maketh all things new. This morning I'd like to share a reading from this book, My Grandfather's Blessing, by Dr. Rachel Naomi Remen. It's doubtful that independence and individualism will enable us to live in the deepest and most fulfilling way. In order to live well, we may need to know and trust another again, to touch and be touched by those around us. Service is the way this world can heal. True service is not a relationship between an expert and a problem. It is far more genuine than that. It's a relationship between people who bring the full resources of their combined humanity to the table and share them generously. Service goes beyond expertise. Service is another way of life. Many times when we help, we do not really serve. Those who help see life differently from those who serve and may affect life differently as well. It's hard not to see the person you are helping as someone weaker than yourself, someone more needy. When we help, we become aware of our strength because we're using it, and others become aware of our strength as well and may feel diminished by it. But we do not serve with our strength. We serve with ourselves. We draw from all our experiences. Over the years, I have discovered that everything I know serves and everything I am serves. I have served people impeccably with parts of me that embarrass me, parts of which I am ashamed. The wholeness in me serves the wholeness in others and the wholeness in life. The wholeness in you is worthy as the wholeness in me. Service is a relationship between equals. As I serve, I become aware of my wholeness and more accepting of it. In using it to serve, I come to see and understand its power. Many times my limitations have become the source of my compassion. My wounds have made me more gentle with the wounds of other people and able to trust the mysterious process by which we can heal. My loneliness has made me able to recognize the loneliness in others, to respect that place where everyone is alone and meet others in the dark. Most humbling of all, I have found that sometimes the thing that serves best is not all my hard-earned medical knowledge, but something about life I've learned from my Russian grandmother or from a child. A helping relationship may incur a sense of debt, but service is mutual. Service is free from debt. The wholeness in me is as strengthened as the wholeness is in you. Everyone involved is fortunate to have had the chance to participate. And helping, we may find a sense of satisfaction. In serving, we have an experience of gratitude. Serving is also different from fixing. Seeing yourself as a fixer may cause you to see brokenness everywhere, to sit in judgment on life itself. When we fix others, we may not see their hidden wholeness or trust the integrity of the life in them. Fixers trust their own experience. When we serve, we see the unborn wholeness in others. We collaborate with it and strengthen it. Others may then be able to see their wholeness for themselves for the first time. All who serve, serve life. What we serve is something worthy of our attention, of commitment of our time and our lives. Service is not about fixing life, outwitting life, manipulating life, controlling life, or struggling to gain mastery over life. When we serve, we discover that life is holy. Service is closer to generosity than it is to duty. It connects us to one another and to life itself. When we experience our connectedness, serving others becomes the natural and joyful thing to do. Over the long run, fixing and helping are draining, but serving is renewing. When you serve, your work itself will sustain you, renew you, and bless you over time. The best definition of service I have come across is a single word, belonging. Service is the final healing of isolation and loneliness. It is the lived experience of belonging. Last week we talked about covenant, and in examining our church covenant, we noted that the first two lines, which in covenant talk are usually called the prologue, are what the promises of the covenant are based upon. In those two lines, two things are mentioned. And of course, these are love and service. The rest springs from that. Today, I want to explore with you the idea of service. Why that it is so much an important part of our tradition. What it means to really serve as opposed to help or fix, and how being of service to others affects us, not just the people we serve. And finally, I want to bring your attention to some of the many opportunities to serve that this church offers. In the call to worship, Eileen shared some words from the Christian Bible's book of James. They're words very important in the evolution of this tradition. James essentially says, "Don't tell me what you believe. Show me your deeds and I'll tell you what you believe." In other words, actions speak louder than words. Essentially, we are saying that to be true to this faith tradition, we all need to be doers. This notion that service to others is an essential element of a faith tradition has been around for a long time. We are a church of deeds, not creeds, and that goes back to our early Christian roots in that book of James. But since, in the time, for instance, of the Reformation, when many in our tradition came to understand Jesus not as part of a Trinitarian God, but more as a human being who did divine work, we saw that the same potential was in each of us. We saw Jesus' story as examples of what a person of faith can do to serve the world, and we took inspiration from his life. You heard today in the words from the book of James that faith is important, but faith without works is dead. We are certainly not a people of a dead faith. Indeed, ours is a living faith, a living tradition. And in no small part, that's due to the fact that we are doers. As a faith tradition, we have an incredible legacy of those who have served others in need and those who have served the causes of justice. From Horace Mann, who led the fight for universal free public education for all children, to Elizabeth Peabody, who opened the first kindergarten in the nation in Boston. from Dorothea Dix, who visited the prisons and mental institutions right here in Massachusetts and fought to improve the horrible conditions she found, to Joseph Tuckerman, who with the help of area Unitarian churches provided social services to the poor and immigrant community of early 19th century Boston. Today we continue his work as one of those Boston area churches that supports the Unitarian Universalist Urban Ministry, the oldest social service agency in the United States, the very same organization that Tuckerman started. When we reflect on those who served in extraordinary ways, let's not forget Mary Livermore or Clara Barton, who brought medical aid to both sides of the Civil War battlefield, and Henry Berg, who founded both the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children and the Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals. Isn't it interesting to note that right now here at First Parish, you can serve as part of the very same organization that Joseph Tuckerman started in the early 1800s, today known as the Urban Ministry. And we certainly help carry on the work of Henry Berg when folks like Nathan Marble, who you heard from a couple of weeks ago in the pulpit, and his family volunteer at Buddy Dog, and we as a congregation collect almost $1,000 for them, as we did last month. The very same traditions of service continues today. This week, as we received the horrible news about our bombing of the Doctors Without Borders hospital in Afghanistan, it made me think about those doctors and their call to serve, how they and many others like them in their organization and in other organizations forgo significant wages, nice living conditions, and put themselves in real risk in order to serve others. They're incredible examples of true service to humanity, and the incident shows just how dangerous and risky serving others can be. That situation made me think back to a story from the late Reverend Jack Mendelson, who was the author of those beautiful opening words I shared with you. Jack used to like to tell it. Jack lived right here in Maynard and was one truly committed to social justice and service. When we talk about the call to service, he used to like to tell a story from another Unitarian Universalist church. It was All Souls in Indianapolis, and it's really particularly about one member, a physician named Dr. Albert Drayton. The year was 1912, and an old black woman living in that city was discovered to have leprosy. Panic set in. The citizens built a high board wall around the hovel she called her home. She and her daughter were closed in there. No one entered except one man, Dr. Drayton. She was hopelessly ill. There was nothing his doctoring or the medicine of the time could do to cure her. She was a horrible sight, but Dr. Drayton went every other day to sit with her and give her whatever comfort or support he could. The doctor's own patients got wind of this, and many would not go to him anymore out of fear he would give them that dreaded disease. But he didn't abandon the woman. One day she asked him to promise that he would be there when, in her words, she was passing over. He promised he would, and he was. In her final hours, she asked if he would sing her the hymn, "Lead Kindly Light." Now, as a Unitarian, that was one, not one that he knew the words to. And besides, everyone said he couldn't carry a tune in a bucket. But the woman's daughter found an old hymnal and gave it to Dr. Drayton. And he sang the hymn as best he could as she peacefully left this world. Now, he didn't serve with his medical skills, just like Dr. Remen said she often didn't. But really, he served with the wholeness of his person. The service of this doctor in Indianapolis and those in Afghanistan got me thinking about that call to service that they experienced and the way we do or do not respond to that call in our own life. It got me thinking about what service really is and why it's important not just to the one served, but equally important to the server as well. And I think that other doctor, Dr. Remen, whose words I shared with you this morning, has really something important to say about that. She reminds us that the way many of us think of service is as helping someone weaker or more needy than we are. And when we help, we become even more aware of our strength and skills, and so do the people we serve, and they may well feel diminished by that. Sometimes we might see ourselves as fixers. Been there, right? And that in turn causes us to see brokenness everywhere and to sit in judgment on everything. For many years, I worked with an organization called Partakers, which is a ministry to prisoners, by helping them to get college degrees while they're in prison so that when they can come out, they can get a job and reintegrate into society. It's hard, I think, not to think of a prisoner as someone broken, weaker, needy. In truth, I often think we think of prisoners as beneath us. But in working with prisoners, something soon became clear to me: how much like them I was, how much I could learn from them. Yes, our situations were different, our paths were certainly very different, yet we both had something to give each other. One prisoner, now a former prisoner, he actually preached here with me once many years ago, his name is Harold Adams, set things straight for me. Harold served 30 years for felony murder, much of that time in solitary confinement. When I met him, I expected him to be a broken and angry man. But instead, he was full of ideas and knowledge, and in some ways was freer than I was. In prison, Harold taught himself the law and became, in fact, the jailhouse lawyer. Now, in my legal practice, I had argued a case before the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court that established a point of law here in Massachusetts, and I was rather proud of that. Well, guess what? Harold wrote the brief that overturned my case. And the attorney who won his release before the parole board immediately hired him after he was released as his paralegal, and there he is today. So much for seeing myself as being better than Harold. Now look, it's true, a lot of good things are done by helping and fixing, but this approach can diminish the one receiving the help and at the same time not truly meet the needs of the helper or the fixer at all. Even with the best of intentions and the hardest work, fixing and helping both come from a place of inequality. When we engage that way, we don't really connect. We only bring the strong, skilled part of ourselves to the weak, wounded part of another. But when we truly serve with our whole person, we do connect. Sometimes the best we have to bring to others comes from our own struggles, not our polished skills. We know the pain of the lonely and the ill from our own loneliness and illness. And from this place, we have much more to give. Thornton Wilder wrote, "In love's service, only the wounded can serve." That might be a bit extreme, but we know that service that comes out of the server's own struggles is profoundly meaningful and connecting. When we serve from a place of wholeness, we are enriched as much by the service as is the life of the one whom we serve. In true service, there is real human connection. There is equality. Now, although we say service is our law, that can be a little bit misleading because real service is not about duty. It's about connectedness and generosity. There is a real sense of belonging when we serve others. Dr. Remen says, belonging is the best single word definition of service that she can think of. Helping out of duty or fixing out of obligation likely burns us out. Serving from a place of love and generosity, in Dr. Remen's words, sustains us, renews us, blesses us. The call to serve is a call to bless the world with our whole person and be blessed in return. Here at church, there are many opportunities to do just that. There are opportunities to serve this institution, to serve each other, and to reach out to the greater community. Downstairs, there's a board of suggestions of ways you can be of service in the church, and Jolene, our membership and coordinator, is more than welcome to help you find those. And in your order of service is this pink sheet. I commend you to take a look at it. It's a list of both opportunities for service as well as witness and advocacy that reach beyond us here at First Parish. There are things that happen here at First Parish or happen with people from First Parish elsewhere. And just take a look at that. We have the newest one, which is just starting the beginning of November, the FPC Guest Table, which is a free evening meal for anyone who wishes to come. We have the Stowe Food Pantry, which is here two Fridays a month. We work with two domestic violence shelters and do all sorts of different kinds of service for them. We work with the urban ministry in a variety of ways. There's a prison outreach program. There's a senior meals program Tuesdays and Thursdays here at lunchtime that can always use help. There's fair trade items being sold that help support small farms and families around the globe. The Southeast India project that we've been involved with for many years, supporting children in orphanages and improving sanitary facilities in villages and building schools. Plant a Row project, where you can grow food to give to people who come to the food pantries and other places. Nature Connection, Community Cares, which is the group Michelle talked about for your children, and the Caring Connection, which is the organization that we're all part of that helps within the church. And then on the other side of those opportunities for advocacy for peace and anti-racism and racial justice and issues that are pressing right now in Massachusetts. Please take a look at them. If you're not already involved, find one or two that you can in some way serve. Well, let's return to where we started. You remember that was with the covenant that we say every week. Those words, love is the spirit of this church and service its law. The service is the byproduct of the love. A love for each other and for all our fellow human beings and all creatures and the planet itself. It's also a love for this place, this community, this faith tradition. We will not all serve alike, just as we do not all believe alike. But we will serve with joy because this service, difficult though it may be at times, often inconvenient, is not some penance we do for wrongs we committed, not some duty, but service which allows us to let our wholeness reach out to the wholeness in others. Sometimes that comes from a place we least expect, our failures, our pain, our struggle, the most human parts of ourselves. Service is our belonging to each other. It is this service that so often gives our lives purpose and meaning. We all dream of a better world, of more justice and more love and more kindness and more caring for others. And there is so much service that needs to be done to get there. And we have busy lives and demanding jobs. The task can seem overwhelming, and at times, surely we feel inadequate. From time to time, we may ask the question, what can we really do? The answer is that we all can do something. And here, as a church, we do something. Look around and you see those who've been served in their time of need. Look at the list of the ways we reach out with service, not just to individuals, but also to programs and causes that allow us to make our values and principles real in the world. In the words of Edward Everett Hale, "I'm only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do the something that I can do." To paraphrase the words from the book of James, "Show me your deeds, and you will show me your faith."